This is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded March 2nd, 2016, episode 289, Documentation is a Waste of Time.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
What's up, nerd?
Well, I have been traveling more, but I wanted to start off the show asking for help. I finally got my travel all booked, and I will be in Berlin and London in April. And I want to meet Amp Hour listeners. So I was hoping for some help for some locals to find a pub or whatever, and
speak the language and help him order stuff.
Well, I speak English most of the time,
right.
So London's probably not a problem, but just, you know, finding a place where it's good for that kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm just looking to kind of check out the scenes in both places. I don't know. I know a lot about the U.S. different cities and stuff, but I don't know much about Europe scene. I know the Berlin
European,
has a bunch of
yes.
The, yeah. Like Germany has a bunch of the the CCCs out there, and I talked to Great Scott about that stuff as well. So
yep. Are there any events on while you're over there? Have you checked?
No, I haven't checked yet, actually. That's a good idea. So the real reason I'm going over is actually I'm gonna be part of the Hackaday Belgrade. I'm gonna be giving a talk there. And giving a talk is different for me, but I'll be out in Belgrade as well. I know Mike Harrison.
I thought you've given quite a few talks now.
Nah, I don't like doing it. Still, it's not.
Ah,
my,
right. Okay. Yeah. Right. Anyway, so Mike, yes.
Yeah.
What,
so Mike will be out there
Mike,
too.
Are you?
Yeah. And
oh,
then,
okay. Oh, yeah. Because it's just a jump across the puddle for him.
It's a pretty significant. It's more like it's like flying from like here to Florida. I mean, it's pretty significant. I mean, it's not small.
Oh, right. So it's like 5 hours or so. Oh, no.
No,
like
it's like
a two-and-a-half, three-hour
flight, yeah.
Oh, so. You know.
Right. It's like Sydney to Melbourne, right?
No, that's an hour. It's like Sydney to Adelaide or something.
Oh, okay,
yes.
Okay. But still, yeah, you know, like some distance more than...
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to drive it or take a train, so...
No. Right.
There's another thing... there's also Resonate, which is this the next weekend, which it's kind of an art and tech kind of conference, and it's also in Belgrade, so I'm checking that out, and that'll be...
Oh, I assume Mike's going to that one, because
that's
it's
right.
All
yep.
the
yep.
arty LED
mm-hmm. yeah.
people, which is
right.
his thing. Yep.
Right. And so, you know, so I'm looking to set up my own stuff, but I'm also going to conferences, and I'm also always looking for... I'm interested to hear about other conferences, because, you know, for a long time I heard about the, you know, the EE Times type ones, you know, the, like, ESC is coming up in Boston, but there's also, you know, we're just kind of entering into conference season.
Mm.
It's just hard to hear
right.
about new ones, though, you know? So I'd love to hear suggestions from listeners and stuff.
And you were telling me the other day that you might eventually make it down under.
I was, yeah.
You're thinking about it.
I was looking at flights, yeah, man. So, and then you told
it's
me
serious.
That you might be able to go on a road trip. So it is now in the records. This will be published.
I reckon I can probably get a leave pass to go on a local road trip.
Nice.
If it's overseas, she'll
right.
whinge. But
I think the main thing is we need a road trip theme song. We can't just have you can't just listen to the Amp Hour theme the whole time. We gotta have like
right.
a. Yeah, something. So,
and we probably need like a business destination in mind. Like, we've got to go visit this facility, but it's all the way across the country. Oh, sorry,
yes,
dear.
Right.
I've got to.
where's that telescope stuff? Where was that again?
That's down in Canberra. Yes. I've been meaning to. Yep, set that one up.
So that could be kind of cool.
What I want to do, because I think we mentioned it on here before, is you know they're getting now. You can publicly see. Well, you can't actually see the actual data, but you can see the telemetry and stuff coming from like the Voyager probe.
Oh, really?
And stuff like that. And it's like it's the furthest probe ever. And they get it, you know, it's down in one half a bee stick watt or something, you know. And like
yeah,
the
not
power
a lot of civilization,
just,
but lots of data, right?
And so, you know, at like 200, at 100 bits per second or something, you know, some mm-hmm. ridiculously low data rate, some ridiculously infinitesimal power level, and that's being picked up down there. So I thought maybe that'd be cool to actually, you know, watch them actually connect to, like, the Voyager probe. You know, that would be like, that'd be sweet.
That would be really sweet. So, yeah, I mean, like, even just sending like a ping, right?
Incredibly buoying. Yeah, it'd be, well, they can't send a ping. They just, you know, actually listen to it. So they just, you know, it'd probably be incredibly boring. Somebody pushes a button or, you know, there's a few mouse clicks and, you know, the, and you know, the antenna moves a fraction and, you know, yeah, and then, you know.
Wait, so there's no transmit capability to that thing? It only sends?
Oh, no, they can transmit, but the distances are like days, you know. So it's not like we can just talk to it and get, you know, I just film a few minutes later and there comes a reply, you know.
Right. Have you seen any Plutonians?
I think they're rarely talking to it. I think they're mainly, they've like set it up and it's just transmitting stuff back and that space, and they're happy with that, you know. Yeah. So
That's still pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm sure down there there's not a lot of stuff going on, so it probably clears up the spectrum, like less noise type stuff maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the idea why they put it in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. Yep.
Interesting. Mm. Yeah, so that might be late summer, my time. What would you be, like early fall?
Spring.
Spring? Early spring, yeah.
No, it's actually fall now here.
Well, oh, right, so yeah, it'd be moving into spring.
We don't call it fall here, it's autumn. You know.
Autumn, right, yeah. Well, it's also called that here, so.
Right.
Yeah, so maybe. I was looking at August my time, so. Let's see, August my time. August my time, Dave, not your time. So lots of travel plans. We'll see. And, so one more thing. I will also be at South by Southwest next weekend, and that's going to be interesting. Because I have not been back to Austin since I lived there, so.
Right.
Very much looking forward to that. Not so much the crowds, but definitely the, you know, my old stomping grounds kind of stuff. So that should be fun.
Got it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, man. Lots of stuff.
Guess what I did the other night?
What did you do the other night?
I actually went to a pub and met some people.
No friggin' way.
Well, not new people. I was just hanging out with some old colleagues, my mate Doug and a couple of others that I used to.
Oh, that's fun though.
Work with. But it's fascinating. Like, you know, you sit down and it's so the industry. You know, of course, everything's, you know, it's all industry and nerdy talk, right? And the companies we've all worked at, and you know, and we've all worked together in the same group. But you know, like, but like a guy I've worked with, we've worked at three companies together, you know, it's like, but all the talk, it's just, the industry is so incestuous.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah, man.
Oh, it's
especially
just,
if, like, you stay in an area for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my mate, right. He, you know, comes in, as you do, right. You bring stuff along, right. So he actually whipped this cable out. I can't tell you anything about it, but he whipped this cable out and it's real special, right? It's super, super duper special schmick. You know, rocket science cable. And he whipped it out and he goes, you know, talks to my other mate, would you know anything about this? Because he knew he used to work at a company that maybe, you know, used some stuff like this. And he went, I designed that. And it's like, I can tell you all about it. Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, 10 minutes of technical talk later. You know, it's just, amazing.
A little bit of a tangent. I don't know if did you listen to Bunny on Embedded it was last week, and he was talking about that too, where he talks about in China, if you want to, like, so he was talking about like the whole it was, first off, great episode, definitely go listen to it. And it's, he was talking about like, oh well, there, you know, people would optimize for buying low cost components because you might be able to, you know, maybe like he talks about remanufactured or reacquired phone cameras, and basically it might be a lot of 1,000 for like sold by the pound, but you basically, he said, like in China you can just go and buy the test fixture from the factory which was originally testing them.
Really?
Yeah, I mean that's what he's talking about. And it's like, that's a great example of like, you know, that there is that, like, it's like,
where do you
insider.
Get that from? Do you get it from the market, or do you just know people because everyone's so?
I mean, if you just look up where the thing was made, and then you just go set up a tour, want to talk to someone, that kind of thing. You know, it's just part of the.
Oh, okay, right. And you sort of go on tour with cash, and you go, hey, can I buy that over that test jig over there?
Right,
you
know, exactly. Yeah, it might not work. It might not happen, but
right.
It was. Very eye-opening. Wow. And Bunny talks about a lot of cultural stuff, too. Like, that was kind of in the discussion of cultural stuff. But that whole, you know, we could talk to Bunny all day long, and Alicia and Chris as well. You know, that's just like, so that was a really good episode. I really liked that. I mean,
cool.
There are enemies. That's what I'm supposed to say. Our rivals, embedded.fm. Rar, rar, rar. Yeah. So, did you end up ordering his book or no?
No, I don't think I did. I was going to. What the hell happened?
I think you still can. You know. And I think you can after the fact, too. But okay. I ordered one. Right. So, yeah, it's looks good.
Excellent.
So you were saying, though, you were meeting up with some pub people, and so you had that same kind of, like, insider, I designed that kind of thing. Like, it is, like, that extreme insider stuff, right?
You know, but the coincidence of the person that you whip the cable at is at the table with you, and, yeah, I designed that, you know.
I don't know if that's coincidence, though. I mean, like, it's small industry.
No, it's not,
you know?
Because he actually knew that he worked, he used to work at a company that may have been involved with this in some way, shape, or form, or may know what it is. But, yeah, no, the fact that guy, you know, actually specced it and everything else.
What trips me out is, like, sometimes, like, okay, so maybe that guy moves to a whole another area, doesn't know anyone anymore. Like, the knowledge just goes with that guy, you know? It's just gone, you know? Like, there is no documentation. Yep. Like, it's, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, some companies are better than others. But, you know, there's always a fidelity loss in you know, writing something down on paper versus being able to sit down and talk with someone about, well, why'd you do this? Why'd you do that? That kind of thing.
Yep, exactly.
And it's... You know, you got to wonder how much, like, residual knowledge, you know, you look at any piece of electronics, especially stuff that maybe, you know, it was quasi-popular but not super popular. Like, so I'm, like, looking at my HP printer here, right? So, you know, consumer tech, not a big deal. There's probably something interesting in there, and it's probably in someone's head. You know, like, it's just, like, why they just made this decision, or even, like, the small manufacturing decisions between, you know, oh, well, we had this initial design, but then to cost reduce it or to you know, make it faster or blah, 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 whatever reason you actually decide to change something in manufacturing, those kind of decisions, like, it's just who's got time to actually document all that stuff? You know, it's pretty crazy.
No, and even if you like, I've gone to the nth degree to document stuff. Like, I've worked at big companies where that's all you do.
Right,
you know?
Right, like, right, right, yeah.
That's your thing. That's what you're expected to do. And still, you know, I leave the company and, you know, I get phone calls. Dave, how the hell does this, how did you make this work? How does this work? It's all documented, but, well, I don't know, we can't find it, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, for goodness sake, you know.
Yeah, no. That happens way more than people know. And and like in big companies too, you know, it's just, and sometimes it's, well, that's the old rev, and we can't do it like that anymore, and just figure it out. I remember at past company, there was, you know, it's even worse when you have really, you know, top-notch designers. Like, they're doing, you know, it seems like magic. They're, you know, they're what do? You put the tongue out to one side, and, you know, you kind of holding out the thumb kind of thing. Like, you know, they're figuring stuff out by feel or touch, or they're just kind of trying a lot of different things. And it's almost even worse when it's like, it feels like they're working miracles with, you know, like a couple capacitors at a time, and then you're like, how'd you do that? And then they don't even know, you know. It's like, or when that person leaves, I've seen exit interviews that involve cameras while they're explaining what they did.
Oh,
and
really?
Philosophy.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
It was like pretty insane. So,
right.
It's amazing how much products can actually hinge on, you know, a couple key designers, right? I mean, that's kind of what we talk about a lot, but it's reality.
Well,
it happens.
When I left Sercel at the time, I was working at Sercel, you know, and I gave them, you know, a week's notice or something, or I don't know, a week and a half or something. I was supposed to, you know, in the contract or something, you're supposed to give them, you know, 4 weeks or some crap like that, you know. So I give them like a week and a half. Oh, you can't do that. We can't do that. You have to transfer all the tech. Sorry, dude. That's
contracts are there for a reason.
It's not a contract. It just means you don't get paid for those extra. Like, and it's like, well, I don't care.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know,
F you money. Remember, folks, that's what Dave's talking about here.
So then they had to fly out guys from France to
Oh, jeez.
You know, like on the plane, like they had to make a, you know, phone call, get on the plane now, come here, Dave's leaving, you know, we, you have to extract and document all the knowledge in his head, you know, even though most of it was already down, you know, on paper. Somewhere.
Right, but yeah,
yeah,
there's,
no, they
there are
all
those small
out.
Things, right? I mean, it's just a couple small things once in a while, so. Yeah.
And I, so bugger the exit interview, I spent the next week just,
hanging
locked
out
in a room.
Dudes. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Whew, man. That's that's pretty crazy.
Yep. But it wasn't videotaped. Well, this was, you know, nobody videotaped things back in those days, I guess.
Yeah, oh, well,
those days.
Yeah.
Jeez, wasn't that long ago, you know?
No, but like, you're right. I mean, it's not like everyone had, you know, nice you know, cameras on their phone type of thing.
No, exactly.
It was
nobody
a separate piece
had
of equipment.
A phone camera that took video, you know, that was unheard of.
Right, exactly.
So.
Yeah, so, man, that's... You know, I've been out of the hardware as a job thing for a while, right? And I still know the importance of documentation and all that stuff, and but it feels like it's, I don't know, how are people doing that these days? I guess that would be another question for the audience, because I don't know if you know that either anymore.
Well, probably a lot of people aren't. I mean, I've worked at companies where no, documentation is a waste of time. Don't do that.
Really?
No.
They said that?
Yes. Yeah.
Whoa.
I'm serious. I can remember my first day at a company who shall remain nameless, or the first couple of days. You know, I started, you know, I wanted to impress, you know, so I'm, you know, they gave me a little project, and I and I came from a big military, you know, company where documentation
is,
you know,
part
everything.
Of the culture, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's part of the culture. So I did this massive, you know, 10-page document of the project I was working on, explaining everything. You know, I took it in, proudly showed it to them, and they're just looking at me like, what the hell is that? Why did we didn't ask you to what? Like,
really?
Don't waste your time doing that. Seriously, yes.
Wow.
And, yeah, I went, okay. Okay, right. I just learned lesson number one.
Yeah, right. If
this
that's
company,
the,
you know.
What
and,
do we really care about here? It's apparently not long-term support of...
No. Well, you know, because, like, everything's gung-ho, right? It's like, get the job done as quickly as possible, and, you know, anything else that wastes your time is just, you know. And some companies thrive and operate like that. I mean, there's...
Sure,
you know, you can
say
like it's not
stuff,
good,
right.
But, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I thought it was important enough to document, so I documented it. And obviously, nobody else agreed.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there still is, you know, the standard Word doc kind of stuff. I mean, there is just the straight long form text type stuff. I know that you are going to rebel against what I'm about to say, but I actually think that if, you know, when people finally give in and start doing revision control from the command line, I think that actually is pretty. If you know, depending on how you actually comment things and stuff too, but like, because it's usually, you know, as you're going along, I change this because that kind of stuff. Like, I think there's some value in that too. I mean, that takes a lot of discipline as well. But
well, on the stuff I've always worked on, it's like you just keep the document up to date. You know, it'll be a Word document or whatever. Before that, it was actually physical paper. You would cut and paste, and you would, if you wanted to make a new one, you'd take a photocopy of it.
Cut and paste, like physically cut and paste.
Physically cut and paste. You print that. You paint glue, right?
Susan,
you put glue on the back of that. Seriously,
where's the control V? You, David, do you mean the glue stick? Yeah, I meant the glue
stick. That's it.
Yeah, man.
I'm serious. That's how. You know, these huge A3 folders, there was a whole room full of every project, and they had like a Dewey decimal number system or whatever for all these A3 folders, and you had these big, every when you first start the job, right, here's your stack of A3 graph pads, you
Jeez,
know, and this is what you use to document everything, and
Yikes.
Cut and paste.
Yeah, no.
Anyway, so you'd take a photocopy of that. Anyway, no, I was saying, like, you just keep one master Word document up to date. And, yeah, you might sort of keep maybe some archive copies of it, but generally you don't remove information from it. You know, if you're documenting a design, you want the latest.
Right. You just move the relevant stuff
version.
In the front or.
You know, you want all the photos in there. You want all the graphs of how things work. You want the flow charts. You want the, you know. All sorts of jazz in there, and it's, you know,
Yeah, so because ultimately it's the design decision stuff that actually is probably the most critical. Why, you know, it's not the what or the how, it's the why.
No.
Right? It's because if you need to re-engineer it later, you know, I can't find, you know, why did he use this really weird fancy crystal?
Yep.
Oh, it's because of this property and this property. And it's like, oh, okay, I can go find that. Versus, I have one part number. Please, is this part number anywhere in the rest of the world? It's no. I guess I'll buy it from Alibaba. This might go badly. Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah, no. I was talking more about like the in situ, like the more like, I mean, it really was more like the schematic changes, stuff like that. Oh, well, I moved this resistor, that resistor because of A, B, and C, that kind of stuff. So, but even that's usually, you'd really have to do it almost on like a per change basis. So like, it would be like, move R1, document it. Move R2, document it, that kind of thing. And most people won't.
So you need a revision change document, you know, not only I change this, but a big why. And that why could include 3 pages, 10 pages
of
graphs and data and photos and all sorts of things.
Totally,
you know?
Could. Yeah, yeah. If you were really rigorous about it, it could totally do that. And, you know, and like, again, like we've talked about, I think we've talked, I mean, we have. But like, you know, the whole software world kind of influencing the hardware world more. And I think that's actually one of the benefits is that kind of stuff, because it is more like the incremental changes. But actually, I think that, you know, if you get in that mode of, you know, changing and documenting as you go, if you get into that mode, it can be pretty powerful, but it's really all about practice. And that's what the hard thing is. So like you said, I think 2 episodes ago, you were talking about, well, I don't want to be forced to do it. And I pretty much agree with that. You know, like, it's just more of a cultural thing. It's like, if, you know, understanding the benefit of it and then doing it, that kind of thing. So.
Got it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Documentation is a waste of time, apparently. Until it's not. Yeah, right.
All right, let's go on to the next topic. All right, really, I'm yawning now.
No, I am too.
Hang on.
Damn it, Dave.
Yeah. And in other news, Sharp.
Yes.
Got bought.
This is interesting because of who bought them. Not that they got bought. I mean, everyone's getting bought. But, yeah, they were bought by Foxconn, which is quite...
And they're an assembler, basically.
It makes you wonder, I don't know, have you had this happen where you have an obsolete part and sometimes it's like, well, we should just buy the company? Like, you think maybe that's what it was?
Right. It has been discussed at a company I worked at, yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
yes.
Man.
Oh, like, because I worked at a company that was so big, like I'm talking, you know, $50 billion or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, they can afford to buy somebody. So, yeah, it has seriously been talked about.
Well, and we've talked about that on here before, too, not from buying a whole company, but, you know, like Apple talking about buying out an entire fab's worth of DRAM type of thing, right? Like, like the economies of scale getting so, and the demand getting so high that it's like, yeah, you almost are willing to do that based on, you know, it's just a business decision at that point. You know, you have
to
secure your supply chain.
Well, it's not only that, but the thing with Apple is they get a much better return on it, because Apple are sitting on like $50 billion of cash, right? And cash doesn't earn anything, right? It earns no interest. In fact, it could be, you know, it's a liability,
right? Because of depreciation, whatever.
Yeah. So what do? You plunk down $1 billion, we'll buy every DRAM for the next 10 years, you know, and like, you plunk down that cash, and you get the biggest discount in the industry, right? Because you're willing to plonk down that cash that, you know, nobody else can touch you on price for those DRAMs or whatever, those displays or whatever it is, you know?
Yep.
So they actually put their cash into inventory, which is often not a good business practice, but once you get so huge like that, it actually becomes good business practice.
Yeah, I mean, that is a whole segment of the supply chain that I'll just never... I mean, like, there are people that are like... Yeah. There are probably legions of people that are dedicated to that kind of thing, and I just... I don't...
Oh, for sure.
I don't understand that. So I'm going to be on a panel at South by Southwest, and it'll be with me and Scott Miller, who's been on the show before. And I was emailing him. I'm like, look, I mean, I could talk about sourcing and stuff, and I will be, but like, I'm like at like 1,000, I'm kind of like out of the game. You know, I was industrial, like that just is my thing. And like, there are just totally different considerations where, when you get to 10 million or, you know, a billion units or something like that for an Apple, obviously, it's just, yeah, it's a whole other, you have gravitational pull at that point. You know, you are, you are the sun.
You are the sun, which is bending the light,
that's
you
right,
know.
Right.
Like you
sending gravitational waves, right?
Yeah, it's serious business.
Yeah, yeah. And so,
speaking of panels, I was on a panel once and that was it was a dismal failure.
Really? What was that like?
I went to the US, right, at the DesignCon thing, and I was supposed to, you know, host a panel. You know, I was supposed to be the host and of this panel. Can't remember what we're going to talk about. Anyway, they foolishly booked it during the big dinner. Like, you know how these conferences, like, you often have, like, a huge dinner at night.
Yeah, like a banquet almost, yeah.
Like a huge big banquet thing. And it was like, they held it during, they thought it'd be good. Yeah, it's a good idea. Let's hold it during dinner. And it's like, so we're sitting there on the panel and like, nobody could hear us. Like I've got the mic, you know, we're turning
right,
it up.
Right.
And like, and I'm actually at one point standing on the table with the mic going, can anybody, you know, hear it? Like, and nobody's paying attention. So,
right,
so
there's
I
food
just
in
got,
front of them.
Yeah. So I just got the official, you know, cut it, but you know the guy in charge just gave me the throat cut, you know,
right
sign, you know.
Well, at least you didn't get the hook like in the Apollo Theater or something, right?
Right, yeah. And yeah, so that was a dismal fire. So yeah, they flew me all the way from Australia to this was one of the big things, and like,
I hope
oops.
That's not hope that's not me.
So if you run at a panel, don't do it during dinner because people don't pay attention.
Okay, I will. So, I'll keep that in mind. If I have no control over this, but yeah,
right.
So that's pretty crazy though about that that supply chain stuff. Though, like the, I would love to hear. We need to check back in on this in a couple months to see if it actually was more towards like securing the supply chain versus just a business decision. You know, so
will we ever know? Like, what's the
how would we judge that? I think it would be if we hear reports in a like 6 months or whatever the deal goes through that like someone else wanted to buy Sharp stuff and Foxconn is like, well, there's not available because we get it. You know, like that would probably
right.
be yeah.
Yeah, so we have to rely on third party report or something,
of
maybe
course,
to
of course, yeah.
find out what's going on.
I think that's true for a lot of this stuff, you know. I'm in Cleveland, so everything I do is third party.
Right.
Yeah. Chris Gamble reporting here from the basement in Cleveland. Yeah.
And from his basement, he can see everything, all the action.
That's right. And I saw recent news about Raspberry Pi 3. Did you see that?
Oh, I yawn.
Yeah.
Like there's so many of these freaking boards. I'm just going, I'm like, who cares? Sorry for all you Raspberry Pi aficionados, but... like, I don't know. Tell me, okay, what's different? Whoop-de-doo.
I mean, it's the integration of Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. I think it's just more of a...
right, okay.
...consolidation thing more than anything else. I mean, really what it comes down to is that...
does it cost more? Is it the same price?
It's the same cost, yeah. You know? So basically just, you know, same cost, enabling more, you know, fewer external components. So yeah,
right.
I mean, like that's
is
something.
It using the same processor, or is the processor they're using some whiz bang new processor that has all this built in?
I'm pretty sure it's a new processor that actually has the
right
stack
and it has it built in. Otherwise, yeah, it's just another bomb part and I can't see how they can make it cheaper. So yeah,
well, there is always the dive of part cost over time, but
there is, but you know. Yeah, I would have put my money on that fact that they got a new whiz bang processor. That's
Yeah, that makes sense.
Got it all built in, and sure enough, yep. So yeah, I don't know.
I think that actually does make a difference though, because you know, any kind of level of integration usually ends up benefiting end products, right? Because like think about like, did you ever used to use those external Ethernet PHY chips with like stacks?
Of course.
And, you know, those kind of things. Like, yeah, I mean, like those were a solid business for people. And
of
now,
course.
And now, like, there's still the PHY elements usually separate and stuff like that. But, you know, like, all of the, or is the PHY, what is it? Like, the
Mac.
The Mac is internal to the chip now. The Phi is still the Transformer is external. But yeah, I mean, like, it's all integrated now, and there is power to that. I mean, ultimately, every electronic component, or every chip especially, is going to have higher and higher levels of integration, because that's how all these companies see their margins improving, right? Oh, well, you don't have to buy that chip, so now you can buy our super integrated one and pay less overall, you know? Solution cost.
So, yes, don't get me wrong. I do like this. It's just that, you know, I'm sick of hearing about new Raspberry Pi or bloody...
yes, of course,
you know,
of course. Another
Arduino
board,
or,
right, another board.
Another board, another development board, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yep. No, it's just, it's not, you know, it was big when it first came out because, oh, look at the cost of it, you know? Like, it was a big thing. Now it's like, well, who cares? Okay, so what?
I think, you know? Well, I think ultimately... So, like, the platform had a lot of promise at the beginning because I think, you know, they were going for education, and that was the right move.
Yep.
And I think that they're delivering on that. I know Matt, who's been on the show, has been expanding their U.S. side of education. They've been doing a lot in the U.K. as well. And I think that's really good.
But the big thing was the price, though. The big thing was the price. You can talk about education until the cows come home. The big thing everyone went wow about is that it was $30 or something.
Right, and the idea that you could integrate it into everything, and really that was the thing that didn't really come through, and it was because, oh, well, to connect it, you need this and this chip and this
peripheral.
You need
this and this and this.
Right.
But now it's all built in. Okay, fine. But it's kind of like, yeah, it's not – I expected that.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. No. But I think that just moving towards that future of higher and higher levels of integration, right? We see that everywhere else, and so seeing that now as an accessible, low cost thing, sure. I mean, that's going to be actually pretty good. Yeah. I think that'll, you know, every product. So now, what you can imagine is every product that was designed for that same header now basically gets a free upgrade. So that's kind of interesting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all.
Fine. Yes. It is so noted as being interesting.
That's right. That's right. We basically exist as a bookmark in audio history now. That's all we.
Right.
That's all we're good for anymore.
Back in 2016,
Dave.
Chris Gemmell and Dave Jones noted that it was interesting.
That's right. Someone hit Wikipedia with a.
Our timeline. It appears on some official timeline somewhere.
Right.
You know?
We are a. First, are we a first source or a second source? I don't know. Actually, we'd probably second source, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't know. I don't understand all that Wikipedia stuff.
Wikipedia, right.
Have you seen my Wikipedia page?
You know, I check it every week, but I haven't seen it recently. Right. No, actually, I don't. Actually, I
don't. It is not the page. The page is about as unremarkable as you could get. Mm-hmm. It's the talk page. Have we mentioned this on here before?
You've posted on that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you talked about that a little bit.
Jeez. It's like three or five times the size of Donald Trump's one. and he's like one of the most controversial guys on the planet.
Not anymore.
And yet there's
Dave Jones for president. I would vote for him over Donald Trump.
I don't know. It's crazy. So I don't know what's going on there. That's just madness. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Oh well. What have you been doing? What's up with you, man?
What have I been doing? I got a new camera after this. I'm going to go shoot some high-speed video.
Ooh, what's the plan for that?
I don't know. I asked on Twitter, and I'll just get some random stuff and shoot them at 1,000 frames per second and see what happens.
I think the obvious one is things blowing up. I mean, I think that's
bit. And arcing and so. They were my two first thoughts, of course. I just shot, just a couple of minutes before this, I just shot a vacuum fluorescent display. And at 1,000 frames, you actually need 1,000 frames per second, which is really interesting. I thought, you might be able to see it at, you know, like a couple of hundred or something. But nope, you need 1,000 frames per second. And even then, I've got to slow it down so that you can see the cyclic nature of the refresh and the multiplexing of the vacuum fluorescent display, how they've only got X number of drive lines.
Yeah,
right?
So what is it, like, so they drive the entire character, like, at the top and then it kind of propagates down?
They drive, like, 10 characters at a time, so it's like a two-line vacuum fluorescent display on a bit of Keithley gear, right? Uh-huh. And
I used to work on that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Royer oscillators.
the source measure unit, know, the 2400 source measure unit. Yeah. I just shot that as a bit of test footage. And yeah, and you can see it like scanning around where they drive like 10 characters at a time, but there's like 40 characters. So you'll see it like in banks. You'll see these banks just go one bank, two, three.
Yeah.
And well, it's more than that. There's like 10 banks as it scans around the screen, but you got to do it at 1,000 frames per second.
So it's that fast. It's just...
It's that fast, yeah. So they're scanning it at kilohertz, not, you know, hundreds of hertz.
Right. Just for the persistence and everything else to get that smooth look. Yeah, because you can catch... Yep. Like, you can catch that... It looks weird, but it's not really discernible if you just put it on a regular camera normally as well, right?
Yes, yeah, yeah. The shutter speed will show it up. Yeah, right. I have that problem a lot. If I'm taking... Or if you're taking a photo, you'll see, like, eBay photos, right? If you're take a photo for eBay, if you don't have enough light in the room where you're taking the photo, it'll, you know, your camera's on auto, it'll choose a low shutter speed of, you know, I don't know, 1/50th of a second, which sounds like enough, but it's not.
It actually
captures, you know, half of the display. And then you get emails from people saying, the display doesn't work. What's wrong with the display?
Well, understand
how cameras work, you know.
Right, exactly.
And, yeah. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's
interesting.
So why'd you get this? I mean, was it given to you or was
No. I just wanted to shoot some high speed footage because my 1,000th video, my next video is my 1,000th upload.
Seriously? Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
Why did I think you were lower than that?
I thought I'll just do something fun. Yeah, and I'm not talking official videos.
Okay. There's numbered videos.
There's 850 something.
Okay. Official, well, you can use it again when you hit 1,000 official too, right?
Yeah, of course. But no, cool. I just thought I'd do something fun for the 1,000th
upload. The way that I understand it, so I've watched some of those, like, the high-speed camera guys. Like, there's a bunch of YouTube channels about this kind of thing. But the way I understand
it... slow-mo guys.
Yeah. You need, like, tons of light, though, is that right? Like, you need flood
it with light. Light is everything. Yeah, light is everything. But this camera is pretty good. Like, yeah, I shot the, you know, just with half my studio lights off here, or most of them off. And, you know, yeah, it's kind of grainy at 1,000 frames per second. But, you know, yeah, light is everything. So... Mm. The best thing you do is just shoot outdoors. That's it. Like, solved.
Yep.
Problem solved. Shoot outdoors.
Except for the whole, VFDs were not made for outdoors. That's the main thing.
No, they're not made for outdoors. So I'll just, you know, I don't care if it's grainy. I just want to show the fact that it multiplexes, you know, and scans around.
Right.
And,
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, so I saw some of those suggestions on Twitter. I think, things blown up, things heating up, that kind of thing. Yep. Sure.
Arcing over. Yeah, so I'll do all those. Yeah. I'll do all those.
Okay.
So,
otherwise, though, I mean, not a lot is visible. You know, like, there isn't a lot of...
I know. There's not a lot.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's obvious to blow stuff up, but in the electronics realm, like, what, you know, like, so, I'll probably, like, try and do a fuse explode, right? You know, I'll try and, like...
Oh, that's
like,
actually, like, yeah, that's a good
one. Fuse actually burst in. But I don't know how good the macro is on this. I haven't, like, tested, you know, the macro... So maybe I can tape my macro lens on the front, and maybe I can try and,
that's a good idea.
Do that, but yeah. So I need to experiment with that a bit before I go all gung-ho with that. But yeah, that'd be nice. You're right. There's not much in the electronics. It's electronics. It's solid state. You know.
Right.
Gone are the days of filaments. You know, glowing and.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, maybe you could get like a tube. Yeah, a set of tubes heating up or something, but.
But whoop-de-doo, it's not that exciting.
Yeah,
that's
it's a resistor, effectively.
It's boring.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. We work in a boring field that you can't see anything happen.
Yeah, so I deal with this stuff from, like, the, you know, so, like, I deal with this for websites, right? So, like, McMaster.com, McMaster Cars, like, visual website, like, that is, like, one of the best. I just love it. I mean, like, from a, if you needed to find, like, a screw or whatever else like that, like, it's just really nice visually and stuff like that. And I've been trying to make a website let's show all the different chips. And it's like, man, you can't tell one chip from another in an SOIC8 package. It's like, you know, it's, the beauty is all in the graphs, you know? And, like, that's...
Right. Yeah, that's, I know. It's...
Yeah, that's how you really... you don't differentiate on the physical. We're more cognitive. Take that, mechanical engineers. You and your valves and your...
Things you can physically...
Bolts. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Sad.
Yep.
Anyway. And, like, there's a lot of people, You know, a lot of beginners. Oh, do I need an oscilloscope? Why should I get an oscilloscope? This is the exact reason, because you can't see what your circuits are doing.
That's right.
The oscilloscope is your window into what's going on, to be able to see things.
Important is understanding how that window might tint things.
Of course.
Yeah.
Right.
That is important. We talk about oscilloscopes a lot here, so...
Electronics.
Another thing we should talk about.
It makes me depressed. It makes me just want to go and get another career now.
Oh yeah, yeah. It might be a little late for that, buddy. Yeah. You're a little invested in this one.
Yeah, I know. Right. Damn it.
Yeah. Speaking of other things we talk about though often, how about robots? Did you see the new?
Why do we want?
Boston Dynamics one?
They're trying to push it over with a broomstick or whatever. Yeah, seen it.
That's not what I wanted to say.
And it's stacking boxes.
I wanted to say. I wanted to say how quiet that damn thing is. That thing's going to come up to you and slit your neck when you're,
Oh, I didn't really get a sense of that.
Oh, it's so much quieter. So, I have been to the Boston Dynamics facility.
You have, yes.
And I got to see a couple demos, and it was awesome. But man, hydraulics are not quiet, and that thing super quiet and creepy. Anything that's that quiet just creeps me out.
Are you sure it's that quiet? I mean, like, what? It could have just been the mic. Like, you don't know what gain the mic was at, where the mic was. That could be very deceptive.
That's true.
Put much stock in that.
That's true. I'm just trying to say that the creepy factor is the quiet factor. I think that as they, there's a whole uncanny valley thing, but it's actually more just as it gets less and less mechanical and more natural, I think it'll actually just in general get creepier. I don't know why. I think that the unnatural noises as well, also creep me out, right? But like not for robots, for drones. Drones creep me out. I think I mentioned that on the show before, just because of the sound.
Well, there's nothing. Yeah, I know. There's nothing more annoying than the sound of a drone.
I think it's. I have a long time fear of bees, and I think it triggers that.
It's in their name, actually. A drone, like a drone sound. Drones came along, it was like that was the word you used. Like a really annoying.
Yeah.
Like low pitch, loud sort of sound. And sure enough, they live up to their reputation.
Does that mean the Ampower is a drone as well? We drone on.
We just drone on. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think it's just something about the sign that. But I mean, obviously, they keep getting better and better. I'm more curious about what the hell is Google doing with these things? Like, I don't get it. I don't get why they bought them, but yeah. Whatever. I suppose it keeps it out of the military for now, so that's fine with me too. So it doesn't actually slit in my neck. Whatever.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not.
So, yeah.
It reminds me of the episode of the Thunderbirds with the robots where they're at the nuclear power facility. Have you seen that one?
I never watched the Thunderbirds, actually. Tell me about it.
Oh. Dude,
I'm younger than you.
Okay, I'll try and find you a video of the robots from the Thunderbirds. It's I've just seen it a lot recently because Sagan is a huge fan of the Thunderbirds now, and he's got this one DVD he puts on, and he likes that one with the robot.
Yeah.
anyway, they're these like humanoid, biped, humanoid robot things, and he sneaks up to him from behind and grabs the guy and
I remember hearing that it was like a precursor to Voltron. Is that right?
Voltron? What's Voltron?
Oh, Dave, you're so old. it was like from the late 80s, it was a cartoon version of robots that were humanoid and came together to form a bigger robot.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I tweeted this the other day. I swear, at least half of the modern cartoons out there are direct ripoff of the Thunderbirds.
That's very possible, yeah. I mean, it was a formative type of cartoon, right?
Man, it was, yep. So, No, sorry, I can't do Thunderbirds robot. It doesn't. It doesn't give me what I'm.
Doesn't
after,
resolve. So what you know it? Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. Anyway. I guess if you put in the exact episode, it might be in there. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I could go to Google Images. Google just rules our life. How do we not? How do we survive?
I don't know. That's how I still. You know. Whenever I'm confused, yes. Yeah. I go find circuits there, stuff like that. I think that's
right. Oh yeah, I just Google Images, you know, because like I'm a visual engineers, are visual people, right? They want to, you know, if you're searching for a connector or searching for a schematic,
yep.
Right? You will go to Google Images and then you just quickly, even though you can't really read the schematic, you can look at the topology of it, even if it's a little thumbnail.
It has an op-amp, it has a FET, it has looks, a whatever, right?
You know, yeah, that looks like what I'm after, and you'll expand that image and go for it. So here we go. Here's the Thunderbirds robot. This is from like 1965 or something. Whenever the Thunderbirds.
I like the single like alarm clock display face.
Yeah, yeah. It's
wow, dude.
Yep. Yep. That's the Thunderbirds robot. So
that is underwhelming to say the least. I think Thunderbirds is what Team America World Police was based on, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. 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 It was. Yeah. Yeah.
They were like marionettes, right?
Yes. Super marionettes.
Super. Oh,
dude,
of course.
Super marionettes. They're super marionettes. It's super marionation. They are not puppets.
I don't.
They're marionettes.
What is super marionation? Why is it super?
Because it synchronized the mouth movements with the audio.
Uh-huh.
And that was a big deal at the time.
Gotcha.
So the super marionettes, huge difference. So yes, do not argue with the Thunderbirds fanboys. You will lose.
Yep. Okay.
You will in how to insult a Thunderbirds fanboy and call them puppets. Trust me.
Yep.
You'll get chewed out. Yep. Anyway.
So what else do you want to talk about, man? This is a long time coming. We're running out of stuff to talk about.
Well, we could actually go early for once because we're both super busy today.
There is some stuff. Actually, so the things we didn't talk about last week that I was interested, but then we had the call-in show. Did you read the Gates energy letter or the energy thing? I don't know what we'd actually say about it, though. That's the main thing.
No, Gates energy.
Yeah,
no.
So the Gates Foundation.
Bill
put,
Gates?
Yeah, Bill, right, Gates, Bill okay. and Melinda Gates put out like their letter, and they were talking about, they were asked, what is a superpower you wish you could have, right? And so Melinda talked about the superpowers, which I wish I could grant people more time, specifically women, because, you know, especially in third world countries, that affects, you know, income inequalities and stuff like that, and just a lot of you know, domestic type issues are caused by lack of time based on childcare and stuff like that.
Yep.
Bill talked about energy, right? And this is actually something I think about
smart
a lot.
Smart guy. That'd be my thing. That'd be one of my things if I could do it. You know, like free
energy,
plentiful energy.
Right.
You know,
cold
free
fusion.
Energy.
Like, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. And so this is going to sound really stupid. I'm going to repeat myself. This is going to sound really stupid, but when you analyze actual superhero movies, energy is always the thing that doesn't jive with the movie, or doesn't jive with reality, rather, and that
right.
also enables the superhero, right? So prime example is Iron Man, right? Iron Man
right.
has a...
Yes.
What his real superpower is the energy source.
The arc reactor,
yeah,
right?
Right.
That's it. Everything else is just biomechanical robot material technology.
Sure, and
right?
There's some stuff there, but yeah, and then
advanced
and then,
stuff. But it's basically the energy. He's got the energy to the localized, you know, megawatt reactor on his chest, you know.
Right, and then also there is the whole, you know, we got to put it through wires, and that's where all the stuff doesn't really make sense. But same thing with bad guys, right? Magneto, right? Where is he getting the energy for all those magnetic fields? Again, if people that
Shut
are
up.
Listening that don't understand this stuff is going to make not much sense, but you know, whatever.
That's the superpower you've got,
right?
You know,
it's some kind of energy
no,
manipulation.
You're violating the laws of physics, you
right.
know. Fine,
right.
It's like,
And so obviously Bill was talking about it from a perspective of, well, there's a billion people on the planet that don't even have basic electricity, even like LEDs to light up their, you know, for educational stuff like that. But, you know, really when you think about, okay, so now let's move into reality, right? So industrial revolution, stuff like that, the things that actually enable us very often, right? Obviously, you and I are talking across many, many, many thousands of miles because, you know, there's large amounts of power being generated to power system servers, blah blah blah. You know, like all of these things are enabled by energy, and it's a really key piece that we kind of forget about, and ultimately moving forwards, you know, obviously there's an environmental aspect as well, but you know, if you can lower the cost of energy, you know, like so like a big economic piece right now was when the whole fracking thing happened, which however people take that, the lower cost of energy, like that ramps manufacturing like crazy. You know, you think about making steel or even, I mean, hell, running a pick and place machine, you know, like that is a significant, running a reflow oven, right? There is a significant cost adder that is just turning them damn coils on, you know, like that is not easy. And so it just, you lower the cost there. It's a raw input to any manufacturing process. And so you can enable more stuff when you have more energy. So, yeah.
Absolutely. No. It's one of the big, you know, energy's probably our biggest thing that the human race needs. Well, in actually it is.
Right.
Energy
is it. Right. And, yeah, I mean so okay, I go out in California a lot, right? And I'm in LA, which is hot and doesn't have much water, right? But you know, you take that to an extreme like a Dubai or something like that, the way that people are even able to live there is air conditioning, which takes energy and, you know, goes through all the compression cycles.
They have desalination plants, which take massive amounts of energy.
Right, exactly. Right? And then also
growing drinking water from seawater, if you don't know what that is.
Right. And then, you know, growing food, that all takes energy. And like all of these inputs there, you know, you can turn basically oil into energy. That's one way, or, you know, any kind of hydrocarbons turn into energy. That's fine. But ultimately, that's one of the big challenges, because if you had unlimited energy, then water's no longer an issue. Great. You know?
Yeah, like, no, of course. We've got plenty of seawater. You know, like.
And it's not like the like transportation is no longer an issue. Pollution is no longer an issue. Again, assuming that a perfectly clean energy perspective. That's not realistic right now. But, you know, if you work towards that, then it starts to get things get really, really interesting, especially from a. You know, okay, again, going back into the fiction world, going towards like a, okay, let's talk about Star Trek now, right?
You're right.
Right, what enables the Enterprise to go across the galaxy? It's those damn dilithium crystals, you know? It's not anything else, right? It's, well, you know, bending physics a little bit. but like energy really enables everything, and finding a low-cost way of producing clean energy has a big impact, so... I thought it was great. That letter was really good.
Yep.
And the Gates Foundation is funding a lot of that stuff. They're working on like slow wave reactors and all that other stuff and a lot of clean energy projects. But man, it's some big stuff too. So it's I'm glad they're doing it, because I sure can't bankroll it.
The guy has a few bucks to his name.
He does. Yeah, they can spare some nickels. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But yeah, I imagine, you know, all we need to do is figure out plentiful, clean energy, and then we can, you know, then me coming down there to visit you would not be a big deal. You know?
We'll just brainstorm it after this. We'll just, you know, I don't know, hour or two should do it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Fusion, not a blah, problem. Blah, 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 yeah. I was always interested that, like, you know, like one natural process that's never... really been replicated in a chemical way is like photosynthesis is like a huge collection and then transfer of energy, right? But there's really nothing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's research into I'm guaranteed that there's research into this, but there's no like you know, sunlight to chemical energy. There's sunlight to obviously PV cells, stuff like that, you know,
biochemical energy,
yeah, whatever that kind of you know, direct generation
all
is.
That photosynthesis. You know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but like, yeah, the bioenergy, it feels like that would be an interesting path forward. I don't know. Maybe if people know of links about that, I'd love to hear about it. We don't really talk about bio here, but it does seem like in terms of things that are going to get better in the next 20 years, bio is poised to be one of those very, very huge things for sure. So.
Won't disagree at all.
So we should...
All right, we've got a couple of minutes left.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a new crowdfunding thing, hopefully very shortly, because the last item I needed came in yesterday.
Yeah.
And and my supporters have already seen a photo of my new product, so.
I am one of them, yep. Although I'm not a supporter. I'm a supporter in spirit.
Right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, I have,
Good.
Hopefully do it. Yeah, I just got to find time to, you know, like, because it takes time to shoot a video and set up a crowdfunding thing, you know.
Of course.
You know, it won't be really highly spit and polished.
What service? Are you doing Kickstarter or something else?
Probably do the Australian Possible one again.
Cool. Yeah, that'll be good experiment again.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Just because I can.
So
really.
Since we have...
And I'm doing it more from a logistical point of view because, like, you know, if like 1,000 people order, for example, and if I do it through my new shopping cart, for example, well, you know, this is not a high-cost item, right? So the chances of volume being quite high are quite significant, right? So, you know, if I do it through the shopping cart, yeah, the shopping cart works. It's reasonably efficient, but it's not as efficient as simply getting an entire spreadsheet of everyone's email, address details, loading it and then loading that, you know, CSV file into my label printer and just going bam and, you know, printing them out because there's no custom.
More direct,
so, like, these things don't. Yeah. So when I'm sending these anywhere in the world, it's so small, I can send it as a letter, right? So I don't, there's no customs forms, there's no nothing. Right. So, going through my shopping cart system doesn't make a huge amount of sense because my shopping cart system is designed to print invoices and print official labels and upload
to the e-parcel
website. No, that's bullshit. I just want to print out a label with someone's address on it, smack it on an envelope, whack a stamp on, which is a $7.80 stamp, but anyway, you know, whack a stamp on and that's it. Bob's your uncle. Done.
Nice. All right. So we have 3 minutes left max, right? I like this. This is time boxing. I think we should start a new segment where I just named in my head called the Kickstarter Kicker because we often...
A segment that we'll never do again.
No, you never...
Go.
What? You think we'll never have another Kickstarter scam or things that fall apart?
Yeah. No. Okay. Go. Oh, okay. Oh, is this a failed Kickstarter?
That's right. Yeah. You explained it. Yeah.
Oh,
you posted it. Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Did I?
You did. 2 days ago.
Which one's this?
The coolest cooler?
Oh, the coolest cooler. Yes, of course, I did. Yeah. Was it the biggest Kickstarter of all time at one point?
It was, I think it, is it still the biggest?
How many?
Yeah.
I don't know. How many millions was it?
13 million. 13 million. So the idea was it was a cooler that had everything in it. So it had a charger, it had a Bluetooth speaker, it had a built-in
blender.
Yeah, the blender was the coolest part. And otherwise that was just a cooler, right? It was $300
right.
cooler and blah blah blah. But yes, well the thing is they ran out of money.
Things cost money. Oh, who would have thought that products actually cost money to put into production? I mean, $13 million and
$49,000 coolers.
Bankrupt.
That's the main thing, right?
Yep.
And then so they have to ship that out, get that kind of like that is a
the shitty. Yeah. The one know what the shitty thing is? You can actually buy it in stock on Amazon. And
really?
They have not. Yes, I can provide the. You can buy it on Amazon. Amazon Prime have stock of this thing. You can go buy it. They actually went. So they didn't fulfill the backers first.
Uh-huh.
And they actually went and put it on bloody Amazon, and shipped stock to Amazon. Like some backers. By the way, they didn't just fail and not deliver at all. Some backers. I'm not sure how many have actually received their cooler. Right, but there's a lot of people who have not received anything and probably never will. But you can go buy it on Amazon.
Yeah, that's
it's matter like.
Well, I guess they need cash infusions, right? Man.
Well, they're basically yes. If they don't get somebody to come in and bail them out, they will fold. So that's pretty much the.
I was telling someone about this. I was like, well, I guess people could just wait for China to rip it off at some point, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But that's crazy. I mean, we knew that the Kickstarter funds in the quote, we knew the Kickstarter funds in the end would not cover the actual cost of fulfilling all backer orders. Man,
that's just, yeah. No. And it doesn't matter how big or small your project, the same thing can happen. Yeah. If you don't know what the frig you're doing, then, you know, like...
What if Kickstarter implemented like a, you need to have sold 100 of these and showed us your BOM? You know, like...
Right.
Like,
yes,
that,
that'd
be nice.
No
more prototype bullshit. Like, we're just straight, like, show us the bomb.
You have to have done a proto run.
Right, exactly. Right, because, like, have some reality to your costs.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Yeah, right.
That's fine. Sell 100, show you can sell 100.
You could have, like, a this has been pre-production certified. You know,
sure,
stamp on your Kickstarter thing.
Right,
like,
it's not going to matter. Some people are still going to buy just based on the video, right?
Oh, of course.
And that's going to happen. And I'm sure, I mean, I watched that video. Yeah. It was a brilliantly made video and everything.
It was a well made video. It makes me want to get one. And then I went, nah, that's stupid. Give me a regular.
I'm a nerd. When do I go to the beach? Well, this is what I say. You're in Australia. You have to go to the beach.
exactly.
Yes. Speaking of, you should go to the beach because we are done recording. So
we are done.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, man. Well, we'll see you next week. Yeah?
Catch you next time.
All right, bye.